Hi, this is Mike Chen, author of A Beginning at the End, and you're listening to Too Much Scrolling. In fact, you're listening to talk about the pandemic in a pandemic, and that's kind of messed up.
Good morning! Welcome to Too Much Scrolling for September 19th, 2023. I'm Steve Fodor.
Arr! I'm Captain Edward Teach there, Steve.
Oh, boy. We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. If you need more information, there's so many ways to find more information. Oh, I hear it coming. Here it comes, folks. Here it comes. It is September 19th, 2023. That means it's International Talk Like a Pirate Day.
Steve, I was talking to my friend Captain Crunch about breakfast, and he was saying that we need to worry about scurvy.
So you had to put a little lime in your Captain Crunch.
It's like your beer, Steve. When you're down in the South Seas, you put a little lime in your beer.
Put a lime in the coconut. You drink it both up. What a fun, this is a fun tradition that we've had for all 10 years of this show. International Talk Like a Pirate Day, created in 1995, taken up by the Pastafarians and the Flying Spaghetti Monster. Here we are.
Steve, it be an international day.
Everybody will be talking like a pirate. Walk the plank, you scurvy dog.
It is International Talk Like a Pirate Day, September 19th. You know, it's not just national, Steve. It's international.
And I love getting to morning announcements on this day. I love giving the International Talk Like a Pirate Day announcements. The kids giggle. This is so much fun. This is joyous. This is a joyous representation of a thing that is just dark and dangerous. Pirates are dark and dangerous, Chip.
They can be. They can be, Steve. But it's also a good day to remind ourselves that you want to have vitamin C in your diet, Steve. You don't want scurvy.
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. You, sir, you went to the movie theater and you saw the third film in the Hercule Poirot series from Kenneth Branagh. This is A Haunting in Venice.
Steve, you can never have too many French accents in your life.
He's Belgian. He's not French. That's one of the biggest jokes about Hercule Poirot, and I'm sure he told that joke in this movie. Did he?
I have no idea, Steve. I was there. It was almost a full audience. I was at the Alamo Draft House.
Yeah.
But let me just say the demographics were a little older, Steve. They were not the same demographics of a Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Really? The Agatha Christie Cinematic Universe, the Kenneth Branagh Cinematic Universe is not the same as the young people. The young people are not watching movies from this genre, huh?
Well, let's go with a couple things. Tina Fey plays Watson. I mean, not Watson, but she is our Watson. She's the every person there to ask Poirot all the questions that we would want to ask. She's to set him up so he looks brilliant. In addition to that, because this is an Agatha Christie novel that is put on as a movie, remind yourself that the doors will be locked. They will somehow figure out who it is in the room. Mm-hmm. By observation, Steve. He has a hunch.
Yeah, the formula is there. When we read Agatha Christie with Pam Bedore, we saw that formula. I admire that formula.
And Steve, just so you know, this is a Halloween story.
I know. This is interesting. Once again, we're seeing a Halloween story just a little bit early. I think if they had released this in another month or so, it would garner more ticket sales.
Well, it's not a scary type of story. It is a Halloween story, though. And, you know, Steve, it'll be out of the theaters by then. You'll be able to rent it, stream it. But not through a streaming service. You'll just have to buy the streaming rights for a play of it. So that it should be out before Halloween, I would suspect.
I'm very interested in what movie theaters are doing with streaming, how the streaming situation has changed theater going, and putting a movie like this or the Haunted Mansion that they put out 2 months ago in anticipation of people not seeing it in the theater, seeing it at home instead. I will watch this one, but yeah, if it was in October, it would be better.
Well, a lot of people didn't see Disney's Haunted Mansion in the theater, Steve. Mm-hmm. So, but this is A Haunting of Venice. It is based on the Halloween story by Agatha Christie. This is, not to give away the story, Steve, but Colonel Mustard in the library with a candlestick.
Oh, let's just go with that. Spoilers. Remember when we discussed Agatha Christie, that's what we talked about. We talked about Clue and how much Clue is such a fun game. And these are fun stories.
In fact, I would bet that Clue may have had an Agatha Christie, maybe skeleton to it. Just basically how they put together how this would play out as you play the game. All right. So let me go to the first part. Should you see this movie? Yes, I think that if you are an adult and you want to go see a more grown-up type of film, it certainly could have been, in fact, I would suggest to watch it in black and white as opposed to color. Because it is, and it also has that slow 1940s build. You know, the way the it was filmed, the shadows, the lighting. You know, this is a colored film. As in its color, but what it really would benefit by turning it into a black and white film.
One of my favorite Kenneth Branagh films is Dead Again, which he did film in black and white. He was going for that feeling of that old timey, you know, very specific genre. And I could see that on this one.
And so that's exactly how it kind of builds. This is a slow burn. It's not boring. It's just like an old-timey film. It's like from the 1940s. You're watching an old film. Vincent Price is not in it.
Okay.
You know, but you still have that same type of actor way of addressing the script and stuff. Now, I want to be very clear. There are some very good actors in this and some performers that are not as good too. And you'll immediately see what the difference is as you're watching it. Some people, it just looks so natural. And for some, it's like they have to dig deep, Steve. They're digging deep. But let's make sure I'm clear on this. I would say 65 out of 100. It's wow. One of the better films I've seen this year. Certainly, once again, a grown-up film, not for every taste. You know, for some people who are used to things moving a little more explosive, action-packed way, this is not for them. But if you ever wanted to experience a modern film with an old-timey feel to it, I think you got one right here.
There you go. I look forward to seeing that one in October. I got a chance to see a miniseries, a documentary miniseries called Time Warp, The Greatest Cult Films of All Time. This is currently on Freevee. That's one of those free streaming services that used to be called IMDb TV, which is just a bunch of letters.
That just rolls right off the tongue, Steve.
But Freevee, that sounds like something that I want to watch. I enjoy this to no end. This is like going to a convention full of actors and producers and directors talking about their work. This time we're talking about the cult films. And you know, cult films is one of my favorite genres. This is a 3-episode feature length miniseries. So that's 2 hours each for 3 episodes. The first episode is all about Midnight Madness, those really bad cult movies that become so important to certain people.
Well, I mean, not bad, bad. I mean, there's things like the Rocky Horror Picture Show, which was the first one they introduced.
Right. Time Warp, the name of the series, is based on the idea of that song from Rocky Horror Picture Show. That joy that I get going to a theater full of the weird people, the people that go to Midnight Madness sorts of movies and enjoy the company and the joy of this really campy storytelling.
Well, what we got from it is because of its cult status, things like a theater could make their budget that evening. So the whole week has been kind of a failure. But, you know, it's Friday night, 11 o'clock or midnight. Oh, they're looking at Rocky Horror Picture Show. And all of a sudden, it would fill up and people are having a good time. Yes, it's late, but you've made your budget. You made your not to, to be there for the next week.
And then the staff has to clean up after them, because one of the things that we do at the Rocky Horror Picture Show is throw things. There's so many things to clean up after a Rocky Horror Picture Show performance. And the joy of coming together to see it is on display in this documentary. They talked about The Big Lebowski as a cult film, one of those films that wasn't exactly successful in the theaters. But boy, oh boy.
Does that surprise you?
The Big Lebowski?
No, that it wasn't more successful in its first run.
You might believe that that movie should have been successful, but it is a semi-philosophical, thought-provoking comedy, and that's weird. That's an unusual genre.
And they said, watch it high.
A lot of the movies in this cult films documentary, the people who were being interviewed mentioned drug use while exhibiting some of these films. Yes,
he's got a carpet. He's got to go get it, man.
It ties the and whole every dude together, and man
was in the script. That was my other favorite part.
Big Lebowski is one of those movies that you can watch over and over again. I love that movie to pieces just as much as Rocky Horror Picture Show. They talk about this is Spinal Tap, which is such a very different movie because of the improv acting that went on to put together that story.
Directed by Meathead, Steve.
Yeah, and
who said for his whole life he will always be known as Meathead. It doesn't matter, his name's Rob Reiner, Steve. We'll just know him as Meathead. And for young people, they'll have no idea where that reference came from.
No clue. I love what Rob Reiner has been able to put together. His films, his way of thinking, and this is Spinal Tap, is a special film. That's a gold star in the history of these movies. That's what I love about this documentary, is we get to hear from Rob Reiner. We get to hear from the actors who were in these movies, talking about the joy that they had making it, maybe some of the struggles that they had making these movies, and how they see the community that is built up around these quirky, strange films.
Steve, in Pink Flamingos, which is John Waters, one of his films, Steve, did they talk a little bit about how to get that final scene with Divine?
All of the scenes
that final scene where they're following the dog around?
There's so much to talk about in Pink Flamingos. Yes, Divine is one of the things that is on display in Pink Flamingos.
They caught the dog poop eating on camera, Steve.
Yes. Yes, they talk about that in this documentary. Thank you for bringing the show to a new level of...
Hey, I didn't film it, Steve. John Waters filmed it.
John Waters is on the panel talking about these movies, and his viewpoint on this is wonderful. Joe Dante, who directed so many great films, is also on the panel. Then there's Kevin Pollak, and I honestly don't know why Kevin Pollak is sitting on the panel for these movies. I can't name a cult film with Kevin Pollak in it, and he doesn't have much to say on this panel. Those of you who love cult film the way that I love cult film, you will love this documentary. It's like going to a convention and seeing all these people. Those of you who love the VH1 I Love the 80s series, this is in that same vein. We get the person talking about what they did on this movie, along with all the movie footage of all of these movies that I love. And it's just one thing after another. This is the kind of documentary that I enjoy, thinking about the things in life that make a difference. The last movie on the list, Chip, is The Room.
Hey, Steve, how's your sex life?
Greg Sestero is in this talking about his experience making The Room with Tommy and how it changed his life. These are life-changing movies, for good or for ill. Tommy,
that's so funny, Steve.
Tommy does not appear in this documentary. I would love to hear his viewpoint on all of this and how he thinks about his movie. The Evil Dead is in here. We get Bruce Campbell talking about the sheer joy here and in a huge swath of Kevin Smith movies and how Kevin Smith has become such a person in the filmmaking world, coming from where he came from and making these cult films. These are the movies that I love, Chip.
Mike Judge also, Steve. How many pieces of flair are you wearing, Steve?
Yeah, Mike Judge is in here talking about Office Space and how he was able to take a doldrum, a boring subject, and make a comedy that is so interesting.
Nobody captured the cubicle as well as he did. In fact, I can't think of a Mike Judge film that hasn't aged in a beautiful way, where he has certainly captured the zeitgeist at some moment. That part in Idiocracy where they walk into Costco and the guy goes, "Welcome to Costco, I love you." Or the part in Idiocracy where they're wondering why the plants aren't growing, Steve, because they're putting Gatorade on them. The salt somehow kills the plants. It just goes on and on.
Mike Judge is one of those brilliant writers, one of those brilliant people who are putting together that mirror to who we are. And that's the cult films that I love, is the moments where we go, wait a minute, are we doing this? Why are we doing this? Is this the right thing to do? We see that over and over and over again in all of these films. I recommend this documentary. Those of you who have something better to do, and put it on in the background and enjoy the trip down memory lane and the nostalgia of these films. Book it. Brings us to our book at our book of the week. It is time once again to discuss a book by Mike Chen, one of my favorite authors. He's been on the show before. He comes out with a new book every January for the last 6 years, and I'm a year behind, Chip. I read Light Years from Home, which Mike Chen published in January of 2022. This is just a wonderful view of that FBI, CIA investigation into the extraterrestrials that may or may not be here on Earth.
But like many genres, Steve, it seems to have a theme, maybe like a Fast and Furious theme.
Yes, Mike Chen absolutely captures the style of one genre and adds to it his family and how family works into all of these stories. That is what Mike Chen writes.
I am Groot.
It's all about family. It's all about family. Fast and Furious.
Well, this sounds very interesting. Tell us a little bit about the plot.
I love this plot. It is all about a family that is ripped apart when the older brother disappears. Suddenly, just out of nowhere in the woods, the brother is gone. The father, who was with him at the time, comes back and has no idea what happened. He has memory loss. There's something missing from his memory. The two sisters, one of them believes that UFOs may have abducted their brother.
And must have been watching the History Channel.
This is the X-Files, my friend. This is very much the plot of the X-Files, where Fox Mulder goes on this lifelong quest to find his sister, who he believes was abducted by aliens. This young lady does the same thing. She goes all the way in, deep into this investigation to try to find out what happened to her brother. The father, who has this memory loss, feels like he remembers something. Maybe there was maybe something about aliens, and he unfortunately passes away. So we get in this story the grief of loss of these two members of the family, along with the tension of one sister believes and goes deep into this investigation, and the other sister tries to live her life, tries to move on with this loss and with this grief. And the two sisters don't see eye to eye until the brother comes back. Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun.
I love this storytelling. I was a big fan of the X-Files. The X-Files had so much heart, so much in the realm of talking about belief and faith and things that you can't see, but you can still believe in, and being proven right when some people really believe that you are wrong. Mike Chen captures that, all of those feelings, along with all of the stress of being a family in this story. We talked to Mike back in 2020 when he wrote his second book, A Beginning at the End, and that was a story all about a pandemic that just happened to be published in January of 2020. And the interview that we had, fantastic, talking to him about his ideas and how he's taking every type of genre fiction and putting his own spin on it was spectacular. His 2023 book is called Vampire Weekend. It's all about vampires and punk music. Get it? Vampire Weekend. And his next book coming out in January 2024 is a quantum love story all about time travel. I wonder who's going to read these books, Chip.
Steve, I have a certain person in mind on who will definitely be reading these books.
I love genre fiction so much. I love the ability for an author to take a concept, to take a story, to give us humanity in that story, and to give us a story that is enthralling. This is an enthralling story. You don't know whether or not any of it is true. Mike Chen is so good at misdirection. You don't know if this brother really was abducted by aliens, if he is really fighting this intergalactic war, or if he is, you know, on drugs or has a mental issue of some other sort that has kept him from his family for all these years.
Well, one way of figuring it out is over dinner. If you're having mashed potatoes, Steve, maybe you start building something with the mashed potatoes.
This means
and then
something.
Look at other members of the family and saying, maybe I'm acting a little weird.
This means something. This is important.
Exactly, Steve. Give me the gravy.
I've always been a fan of the genre of alien abduction, thinking about the topic, and boy, has that topic become important this week again, where yet another possible alien body was put through the media this week. And of course, one of my favorite memes is it cake? The alien that was presented this week looked so interesting that perhaps it's edible. This is fun stuff. Again, genre fiction is a very specific type of person who will read this. This is a book that Chip probably wouldn't read, but I read the heck out of it and I loved it.
It's about family, Steve.
There you go. It's about family and stress. I don't know why Mike Chen is writing about family and stress in 2022.
Why would he do that to you?
Oh, that's right. Because he's really good at pointing out the zeitgeist of 2022, just like he did in 2020. That's Light Years from Home, published in 2022 by Mike Chen.
Scroll with it.
Brings us to our scroll with it. We have had so many fantastic people over the last 10 years talk to us about their wonderful work, Chip.
Can we invite someone else to talk to us too, Steve?
What's great is we can find experts in things that make us sound so much smarter because they know what they're talking about. Today, let's bring back in Teddy Durgan. Good morning,
hey.
Teddy.
Hey.
Thank
Hello,
you
everybody.
Good morning. I'm glad to see you again. Glad to have you back. And your immense knowledge of all things is just wonderful. Thank you for coming in.
Mostly 1980s, as your audience knows. But
it is the 1980s.
Welcome to
a little bit later. Talk.
A little bit later, but you know.
Welcome to 1980 Talk with Teddy.
I've made some decent money out of it. So
Teddy, do you know what I like about the 1980s?
Oh boy, here it comes. Oh, sit back, folks. Here it comes.
Music.
Yes.
I had no idea what it was going to be. If it was going to be horror movies or if it was going to be big hair, acid wash. I had all sorts of things on my list.
Chip, it was going to be a members only jacket, but I'm the last member.
You're the last member.
The greatest time ever for top 40. You pick a year or pick a week, and you got heavy metal, you got rap, you got pop, you got country, you got everything in it.
But we all mature from that, Teddy. Where are we going with this?
We have a special, special guest this week. Not just Teddy Durgan, the expert of all things. We also have Courtney Gaines, who has had such a successful entertainment career. Good morning, Courtney.
Hey, speaking 80s, here I am.
When you want the 80s, you get Courtney Gaines. Courtney, you might know he played Malachi in The Children of the Corn in 1984, coming up on its 40th anniversary, Courtney. How about that?
That means I'm getting old, pal. That's all that means. But yeah, crazy. We're talking about it 40 years later. Here we are.
You said the 29th anniversary. I heard that.
That movie is one of those genre movies, a horror movie about faith and religion. Does it still play well in 2023? I think the answer is yes.
See, I never thought of it as a movie about faith and religion. I thought about the reason it plays is it's about a bunch of kids who are sick of their parents and get rid of them. I mean, if that isn't rock and roll in 80s, I don't know what is. That's going to play forever for every teenager as long as there's rock and roll and as long as there's people want to get rid of their parents, which, teenage rebellion, right? That's as old as time. So
teenage rebellion is certainly a big part of the cult film genre. We just discussed a whole documentary series about cult film, and Children of the Corn might fall into that category of a cult film that we have seen over and over again for the last 40 years.
I would agree with that. Absolutely.
Yeah. Teenage Rebellion. Teenage Rebellion is a big theme.
Which brings us to another thing that we want to talk about is not only are you an actor, but you also are a musician, and you are going to tell us a little bit about your latest album.
Yeah, so I have an EP coming out October 2nd called Safe Haven. It's a 6-song EP, and it's essentially, things I want to call, I guess I could say BS, right? I can get away with that, right? Things I want to call BS in society and things at large. Like one song is called Bills in Space, about the billionaire space race, which I think is maybe the biggest single ego trip on the planet right now. I have a song called The Healer that's told from the point of view of a narcissistic plastic surgeon. So, interesting stories. And it's a lot of fun, and it's definitely rock and roll.
So how is the creation of music different from the other artistic things you did, like acting?
Well, the difference really is the music, it's all out of my head and out of my heart, right? So it's my point of view or things I want to talk about. It's, nobody else wrote this script. I wrote these scripts, right? And as an actor, I'm more of a hired gun, right? I get somebody writes something, I audition or I get offered it, and then it's my job to portray that and offer my color in the swath of the story,
For me, acting is all about adding the emotion. What's your emotional status for this album?
Oh, that's a great question. Well, if that's what acting is and if that's what music is, that's what I do well. I mean, that's what I do. I bring an acting coach named Sal Romeo. He talked about, as opposed to emotion, the mood. What's the mood, right? You got to generate that. What is the emotion of this record? Like I said, it's mainly sarcasm and angst, but like not done in a preachy way, hopefully like in an entertaining way. Like Bills in Space is very sort of upbeat, but it's clearly sort of, mocking the entire thing,
Are you touring to support this recording?
We are. So the record's coming out on a Fake Fang Records. FakeFang.com is where you can get it. The single came out already, Look Out, and that's a story about a boxer having to throw a fight. And if I ever get to the video, it would be like black and white film noir. It'd be very cool. So that's already out, which you can listen to. And if you like that, you can pre-order the record. If you pre-order the record, you can get a personally signed CD. So we have a limited run of CDs as well as you can do digital. So we just signed with a booking agent as well. So we are going to tour it. And we're going to try to piggyback it on some of the Korn stuff. We're going to do some 35mm print screenings of the movie, followed by Q&As. Followed by the band, followed by a VIP. So that's in the works right now.
Wow.
And, we're going to be trying to do like 10-day runs, like go to the West Coast, play 10 days worth of gigs, Midwest, Southeast, that kind of thing. That's the way we'll be able to pull it off.
He said the word corn, and I just think of Iowa.
Think of Illinois. Hey, welcome to the Chicago suburbs, where there is corn everywhere you look.
And I will always think Children of the Corn.
That's what happens when you grow up in Maryland.
Exactly. Yeah, well, of course. That's
I will be forever associated with a food. There's just no getting around it.
How are when you record music, how is it different when you perform it live?
First I'd say this whole thing, I've put out a lot of music over the last few years. I put out a record called Acoustic Gains Volume 1, put out five acoustic songs, had my former band Ripple Street put out 4 songs, and then now this 6. So I've been cranking them out. It all happened during the pandemic, where I was like everybody else going like, what do I really want to do with my time? What really matters to me? And it was like I had all this material I've been sitting on for a long time, and I was like, it was time to get it out. The conversation had been studio time's expensive and all of that. I started going down the rabbit hole and realizing technologically wise, now you can build a home studio for relatively cheap. And that allowed me to track in my own speed, and especially the vocals, not feeling pressured in the vocal room by the hour. And started doing a lot of tracking. And I've learned a lot. By no means do I think any of my tracks sound like high quality studio stuff. I don't think they do. But I put enough good people around me and in the mix and the mastering stuff to make it sound pretty good. But yeah, to me, it's really about jumping back in further. To me, it's really about writing. Writing is the moment of creation that I really, really love. And then you capture that thing somehow, and then you try to get it recorded, and then you try to it's almost like doing a play, right? You learn the show, but then you got to redo the show, right? And that's what really performing it is. And that's why you have to learn to build an act and sort of have a routine and a look and all these things you generate. And that's really what I've been doing the last 9 months. I have a band called the Courtney Gaines Group, which you can find on Facebook. And in the Southeast, you can get paid to play gigs. You play 3 45-minute sets a night. So you're playing for 3 hours. Matter of fact, last night I did two-hour solo show, and then did a three-hour band show. So that was a long night last night.
Wow!
But that's how I've been getting my chops ready to go on the road. So for 9 months now, I've been playing Weekend Warring, playing almost every weekend, and playing within 2 hours of Savannah. We played North Carolina, played South Carolina, and places like that. And I think we're going to be hitting the road, running. We're ready. So I play bass in this band too. I play bass and sing in this 3-piece Courtney Gaines group.
Wow. I want to see this happen. I want to see this happen so badly. You need to come to the Chicagoland area.
I think there's a very good chance here. And I think the corn one, there's a very good chance it's going to happen in Chicago. So
we have corn. So yeah, come on up. Yeah,
we've already talked to somebody loosely about it. There's a art house theater that probably wants to do it. So I will let you know.
I absolutely sign me up. I want to see this movie. That's one thing that we talk about a lot is the culture, the community of seeing a movie together versus listening to it at home. You talked about your home studio and how you can create things at home. Watching movies at home is so different from watching movies together in a community.
Well, I mean, we go back to theater. I know you all do theater and such. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what it's the same thing. Ultimately, with this CD, you get to the point where you've been working on it and chopping it up and adjusting it and trying to, and by the end, it's like editing a movie. You're like, I don't even know if this is any good anymore. Like I have the leaves from the trees. You have to get it out into the world and let the world start reacting to it. And that's the same thing, seeing a group of watching a piece of theater or watching a movie, that group think that response is what it's all about. I've been fortunate to get a couple good write-ups already on the record, which has been really, really nice. I was prepared to get slammed, to be honest. But people have been actually very responsive. People have been very like, hey, all right, he's doing music, let's check it out. And that's, I figure the actor bar for music's pretty low, so hopefully I'm exceeding that bar and people are pleasantly happy, you know?
Dude, is there an actor who has also crossed over with music and stuff that you particularly admire? And vice versa, is there a musician who's made it into
acting? Ooh. A musician, I have to say, even though he's still in hot water, whatever, I think Will Smith probably made the transition the best in the acting world. Sure. From a rapper. I know
his parents won't understand that.
Yeah, that's right. I just don't understand. I say Billy Bob Thornton's doing good stuff. He certainly can act. We did a show called The Judge when he first arrived in L.A. That was this really low budget show where we played brothers. His car, his VW Bug, had broke down, and I was giving him a ride home. And he's telling me how he's writing this thing called Sling Blade. That's the writers, and he's like, "I'm gonna direct it." I'm like, "Nobody was like, writers were not, actors were not writing and directing." I was like, "Good luck with that, buddy."
Oh yeah,
yeah. Mustard
turned out all right for the guy,
Oh yeah, yeah.
French fried taters.
Easily imitated.
Yeah, it's gonna go well, Billy Bob. Go ahead. Yeah, go right ahead.
It's so easily imitated and mimicked, but then when you see it in the context of the film, it just completely works. It's like Forrest Gump, You can.
Oh, it's a transformative performance.
Really is.
Yeah. Excellent, excellent performance.
Really, that's all I have to say about that.
Gump. when you started doing this music and stuff, I imagine, are you starting to see a little bit more crossover now? Like, people came to see you as, remembering all your great movies from the past and stuff, but are they starting to now be like, "Wow, this guy is, I love his music. Oh, wow, he did some movies too."
Are you talking about the gigs I'm doing and stuff? Well, see, these gigs I'm doing are really, they're gigs at clubs or bars or restaurants where, you're the entertainment for the night. They're not really there to see me. They're eating, they're drinking, they're doing their thing. So it's really kind of cool because there are people who recognize me. There are some people who go there to see me, but by and large, they're just tourists in Savannah. Mm-hmm. So to me, it's great because it doesn't have any of that, right? It's just like either they're enjoying it or not. A lot of times they don't even know who I am at all. So mm-hmm. I'm enjoying that. Now, when I do gigs, I've had some gigs as well this last year where people are specifically there to see me. And that's always like a very, you can see it on their faces, this sort of moment of truth. They sort of look, they're all looking like this before the gig starts. And it's basically like they're like, either this is going to be a train wreck and hilarious and we're gonna have a good fun with that, or this guy can actually play and then we're gonna have good fun with that. And after the first couple songs, they're just like, "All right, this is gonna be a good show, let's have a great time." But you can just see the look on their face, like, "Is this gonna suck or not?"
They're made to entertain you. Yeah
So do you think of yourself as a musician at this point, or are you just a performer of all of these different types?
I think I'm an actor first. I started taking acting and taking guitar lessons around the same time, 13 years old, but I always, my intention was to be a professional actor. My intention at the time was not to be a professional musician. I just, like I said, I really just like writing, and it was an outlet for me. But I'm feeling more like a professional musician than I've ever felt before, because I am more focused on it, and I am playing gigs consistently, and I have a band and we're getting paid. And we're putting out a record, and I've been playing enough now that I don't get as much nerves and all of those things. And I'm able to just actually work at that craft. And so I think I'm more a musician than I've ever been.
Hmm. What would you tell a young person who wanted to get involved in either acting or in writing songs?
Well, it's study your craft, right? I mean, that's the main thing, right? If you want to get good at something, you got to put in the work, right? That's the bottom line. And then my best advice for actors, I'm always telling them, is if you can get 1, 2, 3 casting directors, the people who get you in the door to help you find jobs, to believe in you, you can work. So that's like, that to me seems like a somehow tangible goal. I talk about Linda Francis from Children of the Corn is a very good example. She saw me in a showcase. She liked me. She actually cast me in one film that ended up not getting made. And then she was the one who brought me in for Corn, and she very much championed me for that role. When it came down to 1 or 2, 3 people, she was like, "That's the guy. I believe in this guy." So and I've seen it with other actors in their careers too. One good working casting director can keep you working if they really like what you do.
Yeah, we'd mentioned John Hughes earlier, and I don't believe you were in that age range.
Yeah,
back in the time, but I don't believe you ever got into one of his films. Were you ever
I never got in one of his films. I don't think I ever auditioned for him.
Interesting.
Well, I think he probably saw me in Control of the Court or something. It was like, "No way, I'm putting that guy in." Or he already had Anthony Michael Hall.
That's the thing. Yeah,
that's his dude. So one of the two.
That's what jogged in mind of, like, he stayed with so many of the same actors and stuff through so many of the same films. So.
Obviously, if you have a director who believes in you, who wants to keep putting you in his films, that's the best, right? If you're De Niro and you got Scorsese, that's the best, right?
Absolutely.
Well, where can our listeners find out more about this album and also more information about your tour and what other projects you're working on?
Yeah, the main way to find me is on my fan, again, the fan page. You can find me on Courtney Gaines or the band fan page, the Courtney Gaines group. Or you can find stuff at fakefangs.com, Fake Fangs Records, which is where you can get the record. That pretty much is how you'll keep up on what's going on, because we don't have the booking tour together yet, but we will be posting it on the Courtney Gaines group.
And we have all those links that will be in our document, too.
Thank you.
How about you, Teddy? What are you working on?
Oh, wow. Coming up on the 26th, I actually have a monologue that's going to be performed in Leeds, England at the GI 60 1 Minute Tiny Play Festival.
Wow.
And there's 50 monologues came in from all over the world. And mine has the honor of being the very first one going to be performed at the festival. So that's I'm awesome. Looking forward to that. Anytime you can get your words said by a British thespian, it's always a great thrill.
It makes it sound smarter for sure.
It does. It's what made Star Wars, you know. So I mean, it's to be honest, it just made that stuff sing. And then I've had a good run. I've had 5 things produced this year, and then now it's just back to the writing. Now it's like, you know, it's there's a couple things in the works, but they may or may not happen. But I hope they do. That's my next thing.
Sounds like we should all do a show together. That's what it sounds like.
It was awesome. Yeah. I'd love to.
Exactly.
I'll produce.
Somebody's got to do it.
I'll MC.
There you go.
The Chips come to a couple of my cold readings, and you did great on the Jane Gets Sent, because that's actually been like my most produced thing this year was this 10-minute thing. Has been in a couple things actually now, and Chip, it's basically a woman who goes to pet Evan, and she meets all the pets that she had in her life, and they've come to human life, and they give her all sorts of advice, and Chip played. He was a wonderful, very big bear dog. So
yes,
bear dog.
Yes,
I can see that. Good casting.
Typecasting.
That was a fun night.
We need a big bald guy. Well, that would be me.
Scan the room for a second. Oh, there he is. Wonderful. Thank you so much. I look forward, Courtney, to listening to this new album and seeing you, I hope, in the big tour. I would love to be a part of the excitement of being, you know, an actor who sings or a singer who acts. That sounds phenomenal. There you go. The musical genre live and well in 2023. Courtney Gaines, you can find his information on Facebook and Instagram and on fakefangs.com. Teddy Durgan, where can we find you on the socials?
Oh, I'm on Facebook pretty much, the old man social media. So yeah, a lot of people friend me through that.
Awesome. Keep track of all of your successes in 2023 as well. Thank you both for joining us. Chip, what a great 10 years we've had talking to some great people.
It's always fun, Steve.
We want to thank Teddy for coming in and bringing in special guest Courtney Gaines. I look forward to finding the he who walks beyond the rose when he comes and tours with that movie and his band. I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
I think we can. I think we're headed into spooky season. I got some surprises coming up for you. We would love to hear from you. Give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. Our website is toomuchscrolling.com. Our email is toomuchscrolling@gmail.com. We're on Threads and X.com and Instagram and Facebook still. We're on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and YouTube. And you can always ask your smart speaker to play the latest episode of Too Much Scrolling. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Captain Edward Teach.
He walks beyond the rose. We'll see you in the future.
Time for run.